also has death. And because the soul has no birth, he therefore has no past, present, or future. He is eternal, ever-existing, and primeval. That is, there is no trace in history of his coming into being. Under the impression of the body, we seek the history of birth, etc., of the soul. The soul does not any time become old, as the body does. The so-called old man, therefore, feels himself to be in the same spirit as in his childhood or youth. The changes of the body do not affect the soul. The soul does not deteriorate like a tree or anything material. The soul has no byproduct either. The byproducts of the body, namely children, are also different individual souls, and, owing to the body, they appear as children of a particular man. The body develops because of the soul's presence, but the soul has neither offshoots nor change. Therefore, the soul is free from the six changes of the body. In the Katha Upanishad 1-18, we also find a similar passage which reads, Najayate mriyate va vipaschin nayab kutaschin nabha pabhuva kaschit ajonityak shashvatoyam purano nahanyate hanyamane sharire. The meaning and purport of this verse is the same as in the Bhagavad Gita, but here, in this verse, there is one special word, vipaschit, which means learned or with knowledge. The soul is full of knowledge, or full always with consciousness. Therefore, consciousness is the symptom of the soul. Even if one does not find the soul within the heart, where he is situated, one can still understand the presence of the soul simply by the presence of consciousness. Sometimes we do not find the sun in the sky, owing to clouds, or for some other reason, but the light of the sun is always there, as we are convinced that it is therefore daytime, and we are convinced that it is therefore daytime. As soon as there is a little light in the sky early in the morning, we can understand that the sun is in the sky. Similarly, since there is some consciousness in all bodies, whether man or animal, we can understand the presence of the soul. This consciousness of the soul is, however, different from the consciousness of the Supreme, because the Supreme Consciousness is all knowledge, past, present, and future. The consciousness of the individual soul is prone to be forgetful. When he is forgetful of his real nature, he obtains education and enlightenment from the superior lessons of Krishna. But Krishna is not like the forgetful soul. If so, Krishna's teachings of Bhagavad Gita would be useless. There are two kinds of souls, namely the minute particle soul, Anuatma, and the super soul, Vibhuatma. This is also confirmed in the Katha Upanishad 1-20 in this way. Anoraniyam mahato mahiyam atmasya janto mihito bukhayam tamak kratuh pasyati vita shoko kratuh prasadan mahimanam atmana. Both the super soul, Paramatma, and the atomic soul, Jivatma, are situated on the same tree of the body, within the same heart of the living being, and only one who has become free from all material desires, as well as lamentations, can, by the grace of the Supreme, understand the glories of the soul. Krishna is the fountainhead of the super soul also, and it will be disclosed in the following chapters. And Arjuna is the atomic soul, forgetful of his real nature. Therefore, he requires to be enlightened by Krishna or by his bona fide representative, the spiritual master. Again, a beautiful purport. Na jayate mriyate vakada chihin na yam bhutva bhavita na vanarguya na jonitya chashvatoyam purano na hanyate hanyamane sharire. For the soul, there is neither birth, nor death, or at any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, and primeval. He is not slave, but the body is slain. Om Mahyarati Mirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunitam Yenatas Meishri Gurave Namaha. We are in the section of the soul. From verse 10 to 30, Krishna explains about the soul to Arjuna. And this is very powerful beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, because Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti compares the first chapter, first half of the first chapter, to the lassi. Lassi means it's a yogurt mixed with water. It means it's not pure yogurt or not pure water. It's not thick yet. So this introductory section about Duryodhana's doubts and observing the army, the whole first chapter is like lassi, he says. It's not yet thick yogurt. Okay? And then at the end of the first chapter, the everything thickens. Arjuna starts to having doubts. Okay? He is doubting his position, everything. He's doubting if he should fight. And then the second chapter begins, that the yogurt begins, that the thick. Krishna starts from, getting the relationship, establishing the relationship with Arjuna as the spiritual master and disciple, and then he gives him from the very beginning the essence. It's this section about soul. And this is a paradigm shift. Okay? He gives like we approach spiritual master and he says like something. So this is in general, this is paradigm shift, because this is something we cannot understand. Then the whole Bhagavad Gita is explaining, unfolding this simple fact that we are not the body but the soul, and that this paradigm shift usually is very perplexing. So Arjuna is perplexed completely at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita by this paradigm shift. And I wanted to speak today a little bit more about paradigm shift, because it's something we have in our lives all the time, and that's something which caused us to come here, and something which keeps us here, something which is present in general. Because what is it, the paradigm shift? It means that something we are convinced of or solid, or we have certain set of conviction on worldviews, and so suddenly everything, we are giving the perspective which changes completely everything. Okay? And that's the paradigm shift. We have certain paradigms, we view something in a certain perspective, and suddenly everything changes. This is our paradigm, our usual look on the world, it changes. And that's as I told you, that's we experience many times during the lifetime. Because first, and I would say the greatest paradigm shift for everyone, is when one from the child becomes youth. Okay? If you ask any 6 or 7 year old boy to kiss a girl, is disgusting. He says, why to kiss a girl? You don't kiss the girls, usually. The dog, the cow, okay? But then, if the boys have the brother 15 years old, and brothers like kissing girls, so he said, what are you doing? What's this kissing girl about? And then at certain age, let's say 12, there is this paradigm shift in the body, okay? Hormones start producing, they are being produced by the body, and the whole attitude toward the girls of the boys and boys toward the girls changes, okay? Now we want to kiss the girls. That's the shift. But everything changes. The whole attitude towards the external world changes. Then from now on till the end of life, we want to kiss the girls, or girls want to be with the boys. That's the first paradigm shift we experience in our lives. And this is we have also in the scriptures the example of this paradigm shift. We know all the story of Bilba Mangala. He was a very wealthy young man lived in India and had a loving family and had the education, and he fell in love with a certain woman and started be addicted to her, and so much so that he just wanted to spend all the time with her. It happened that she was a prostitute. And then one day he wanted to be with her, and there was a storm, and he lived on the other side of the river, so he did so much struggle to cross the river. He swam through the river, as is said in the story, that was, yeah, he was holding to something, and he thought it was the log of wood, but it appeared it was dead body. But he did it to meet her. And then he came there, and there was a rope. He climbed the rope appeared to be the snake. So he underwent many austerities, or I would say unusual deeds to meet her. And then when he came, she said, because she in the story it says that she was his guru, his wife who came to save him. He said, if you performed such an activity for the sake of God, of searching God, of approaching the God, you would be a saintly person. And this was a paradigm shift for Bilba Mangala. It changed completely his view. He just clicked, yes, if I do this for God, I would be like that. So he just went for the search of God. And he had many, many adventures, I would say. He wrote many nice poems. He went to Vrindavan. On the way he stayed at one home of Grihasthas for the night, but he still was full of lusty desires. And when his host asked, "What you want? How can I please you?" He said, "I want your wife for tonight." And yeah, he was a little perplexed, but okay, you cannot refuse the guest. So, and then Bilba Mangala was sitting in his room waiting for the wife to come. And he just reflected, yeah, I'm in search of God, and I'm still full of lusty desires. And she came, so she said, please give me your, what's the pins from the hair? And no, she gave him, and he just plucked his eyes, because, you know, he concluded, yeah, my eyes were attracting me to her. So I just got rid of this sense, at least. And then he went to Vrindavan, and in Vrindavan he was searching, he was asking, where is Krishna? He was searching for Krishna, and he couldn't find him. So he was a mendicant, he lived on the streets, so there was one boy who started bringing him milk every day. And after some time, they developed a relationship. He started to have the feeling towards the boy, so he was anticipating his visit. So he was waiting when the boy comes. And the boy was coming, and they had a relationship, they were joking. And one day he understood that this was Krishna. And by trick, he grabbed the hand of Krishna and said, now I won't let you go. But nevertheless, Krishna disappeared. But from this time, he lived in his heart. And then he wrote many beautiful poems. So this was the paradigm shift of Bilvamangala. And the similar description of the paradigm shift we have in Prabhupada's books, you know the famous example of the liquid beauty. And there was one man who fell in love in a woman, and she decided to give him guidance in the towards the spiritual life, and she said, okay, come back in 2 weeks' time, I will show you what you love. So she underwent probably panchakarma process, so mean you just empty everything from inside, and she kept it in the buckets. So, and then he came and she looked very thin and ugly, and then she showed him the bucket. So this is what you love, this is what you like, this is liquid beauty I give you, please take it. So, and for him this was paradigm shift again. Okay? These are examples which tell us about this paradigm shift. And of course, this is from the when this leads to this on the spiritual path, it's very good. But also, this is misused or it's used from the mundane perspective. This paradigm shift sometimes may be called brainwashing, and this was very prominent in the times where there was still USSR and Soviet Union and America, and they were, you know, in a Cold War, and there were examples when the spies or someone from one side went to the other, they were caught and they went brainwashed. It means they had certain ideas, okay, I am from this country, I fight for this country, and go there to spy or something. But then, under the process of changing the paradigm shifting, they explain that, okay, no, this is like that. This is the opposite. Our ideas are better, and you should serve the humanity by serving our ideas. So this was the change. This was brainwashing. But this is like materialistic view on the paradigm shift, which leads to spirit. That's why very often in the beginning, the devotees were called brainwashed, because all the devotees basically had this paradigm shift, but this wasn't changing from white ideas like being capitalist or living in the free world to the communist, okay? But this was the idea of being free from material world. So this is much more serious, okay? Because we can do this in the material world, we can do this shifting unlimited, but still it changes much. You are still dying, taking birth, having diseases, etc. So the greatest paradigm shift we had as spirit souls was basically in the spiritual world for us, when we after being servants of Krishna, suddenly wanted to become Krishna. This was our paradigm shift by which we came here, okay? The enemy. We felt the enemy, and we changed the whole attitude toward the Krishna, toward the spiritual world. We were no longer satisfied there, so we came here to find more satisfaction. Okay, so this was like from spiritual to material. This was our paradigm shift. And then Krishna it's like this paradigm shift, it's like having that's why Krishna created a material world, okay, to facilitate our new paradigm, okay, our new view on ourselves and our relationship with Krishna. Because now we think we are dependent, we can do as well as Him. So to facilitate that, Krishna created the material world. Okay, that's that. Also, Prabhupada often compares the material world to that prison. Okay, someone wants to be not nice. Someone has this propensity to steal, etc., etc. So, okay, this is prison for you. You just stay there and reflect if it's the right place, etc. And but then, what Krishna does? Krishna never leaves us alone. Even we do our paradigm shift, Krishna never leaves us alone. So he tries to make us shifting one more time. And that's what Krishna is doing here with Arjuna. He's saying straightforward and from the very beginning, you are not the body, you don't belong here. And this is paradigm shift. And for some, it seems to work. I mean, there are when we were discussing the example that you know, the liquid beauty, etc. In this example, in these stories, the characters, they change the paradigm immediately. Okay, so we are not in such a situation. We have Bhagavad Gita. When this is explained, we try to shift our paradigm again to the spiritual way of thinking. And this paradigm shift, of course, it can be very fast or very slow. The fast is like immediately, and that's what's in the example. But the slow means we learn. We learn many things. And this is what Bhagavad Gita is about. We learn about what is material world, what is the spiritual world. And because if we succeed in shifting our paradigm again into spiritual consciousness, then that's what Bhagavad Gita is about. We no longer are in the material world. Because as we can perceive Krishna everywhere and see that everything is His energy, so we are back in the spiritual realm. It's like with a prison. The prison is built of concrete, of cement, of different materials, of wood. But this is the same material which is outside the prison. Okay. So the difference is between, there are buildings in the prison, there is a kitchen, there is a courtyard, there are people. So the difference is that people in the prison are bad, okay, and people outside the prison are good, let's say. So the difference between spiritual and material world is that people in the spiritual world, or jivas, or living entities in the spiritual world, are focused on Krishna, and in the material world are not. Okay? So when we change our focus, means when we see that in fact everything here, that it's like a prisoner. Prisoner may think that, okay, this place is bad. This place is the worst place in the world. I hate these walls. I hate the bars in my cell. I hate the guards. They are, this is the worst what can be. Okay? That's our attitude in the material world. We think that this is material. Okay? We think that walls, that everything, the trees, the bodies, that it's material and it's real. Okay? And that's our illusion. But when we learn from Krishna, when we learn from Bhagavad Gita, when we do this paradigm shift, and when we understand that Krishna is supplier of everything, okay, he built this. This energy is not different from him, in fact. When we start seeing this, it's like that prisoner who came to the prison being a bad person, okay? He did something bad and he... But by staying, some prisoners are becoming resocialized, we can say. Or they are becoming normal citizens. So they regain their good qualities because perhaps they made one mistake only. They are not recidivist? Something like that come again and again. So there are some souls in the material world, they want to stay here, they are like recidivists, they enjoy, okay, being the king, being the king of power, or whatever they do, they enjoy killing others, that's maybe, and they will stay here, but some of prisoners are re-socialized, so it means that they become aware of their real position. Okay, I am the member of society, I made this mistake, but in fact I have some obligation, I can go to work, I can live peacefully with others, I can cooperate, etc., etc. This is not doing harm to others, not stealing from them, basic things. So if the prisoner has this consciousness, he is practically the free man. Okay, so the same with us, but it's when we get the consciousness of being the spirit soul, and that's what Krishna speaks from the, you know, verse from the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. You are not the body, you are the soul. When we are not the soul, when we don't belong here to this prison, so when we understand this, in this process, and Prabhupada often gives the example of the rod, iron rod, getting hot. So by the process, we become more and more conscious, more and more spiritualized, and we are no longer belong to this place. But everything starts from the paradigm shift. Okay? We have to understand who we are. And then, of course, this is the beginning point. Then we have to understand that there is Krishna, that what is our prison material nature and the relationship between them, the jiva, Ishvara, or Krishna is in Prakriti. We have to understand the relationship. This is Sambandha. Why we are here, what's our position, what's the position of Krishna. And then we know the process of Abhideya. We know how to disentangle, how to become again, good citizens, and then there's prayojana, the goal, we come back to the spiritual world. But everything begins from this paradigm shift which Krishna tries to explain to Arjuna. And if we look from the point of view of the timings, it's really paradigm shift for Arjuna. It was like Bhagavad Gita is spoken like different, like 45 minutes, or 1 hour, or whatever. So, in 1 hour, Arjuna just made this paradigm shift. So it's quite fast. It's quite fast. And yeah, it's up to us how fast we change our paradigm. And we have the tool needed to this. We have the Prabhupada's teaching, we have the Mahamantra, we have the program, we have the association of devotees. These are tools we are using. And it's up to us if we are willing to do this or not. But everything is available. Hare Krishna. Any questions?
I was thinking this in all of you, satsang's presentation. I really appreciate this. Thank you. Now, I was thinking, you said actually you have to decide about the devotees, but you know, mankind, isn't it? And I thought I was saying, what is the difficulty? So many times, yeah. So, we see, could you explain about Rajasthan like this? Let me ask. So, the difficulties that we may face. Because the teachings are very clear, isn't it? And, we have the soul, we have the body, and the elements of the soul and this and that. So we do have to do control the tongue, set it up, but it's still, it is difficult. So, how to find some ideas?
The Bhagavad Gita clearly states that the root cause of all the problems is lust. And that's one thing, but speaking about the, you know, how this lust appears in our lives, we can say that because we are here for many lifetimes in the material world, so during these lifetimes we develop many bad habits, okay? And these habits are still with us, and because of these habits we do many mistakes. For many lifetimes we were trying to gratify the senses. So it comes back and again. This willingness, this habit of gratifying the senses. But this is habit. If you understand that this is habit, you understand that this is not your nature. Okay? Because you are soul. This is habit. Habit of the body, habit of the mind. And then when you think like that, every habit can be changed. Okay, bad habit for good habit. It's possible. You have to recognize the habit and then you can change it. Because how you develop habits? Habits you develop by constantly repeating something. Okay? You constantly look at the girls as an object of some gratification. So it's for many, many lifetimes. That's how animal lives and people live. That's the habit, that's a deep-rooted habit. So how to change this paradigm shift? Just look on the look at the women as mothers. That's the paradigm shift. You break this habit of looking at them as the object of some gratification. And you know, if you recognize there are many habits, we have some to more extent, some to less. So when you understand that, you are able to change the habits by counteracting them with different habits, the opposite habits, good habits. Okay? And that's Prabhupada sense.
Mm-hmm. To see them as mothers, to be able to develop this vision of seeing them as mothers. Sometimes I pray a lot about this, when you see them as mothers. I think it works, but is there any other way?
To change the habit.
Yeah, to see mothers, to see grandmothers. Because prayer is one way, maybe. But
no, the prayers is the fastest, shortest way. The prayers is the most powerful activity that human being has to achieve the goal. Like the sacrifices are different, but prayers is something available at hand. So if you pray sincerely, there is no chance that the prayer is futile. It's of course you have to pray if it is your will, Krishna. If it is your will. Because Krishna has the plan, always the best for us, and he always teaches us something. And we have to recognize that he is the Ishvara. So he is guiding us, we can help him, but he's the one who knows what we did in the past, what we are doing now, and what we do in the future. He knows everything. Only sincerity can help us.
So often they suggest that if you cannot control your lust, then it's just you should get married. And,
yes.
So that, how does it help? Does it help if you get married and there's one life? So then it actually controls.
No, lust, because we are speaking about lust. Lust is the we use the word lust because. Living entity is full of desires, material desires. All they can come into the category of lust, but the peak of the sense gratification is considered to be lust. But sense gratification can be on different levels, okay? You want to eat nice ice cream for yourself, not for Krishna. This is also sense gratification, but it's not so on this level like lust, sexual indulgence. But that's we use lust, but we mean all these material desires, okay? All the form of material desires we have. And because we have them based on habits, and basically because we are in the material world and because we are quite long, it's not easy to become to have human beings, but we still carry our habits and desires from past lives. We come also to Krishna consciousness with quite a big load of our desires. And if we have not this inclination to get rid of them immediately by taking sannyas or renouncing everything, it's difficult. It's difficult for some. That it is recommended we control our desires by engaging them in a proper way. The proper way of controlling desires is to have the house with the many things we desire, TV or whatever. And then in the center of this house, of the Grihastha ashram, there is a Krishna. So if Krishna is in the center, your desires are, your desires are not dangerous for you as they may be without Krishna. Because without Krishna, you pay attention to desires. When you focus on Krishna, the desires are there, but you try to acknowledge that Krishna is in the center, that he is enjoyer of everything. That's the different topic, that by enjoying ice cream, we are not enjoying, in fact. Krishna is enjoying. Because he is the supreme enjoyer. But this is different lecture, how we are not enjoying, in fact. Doesn't mean that we are suffering. No, we are the instrument of Krishna's enjoyment. Because there is nothing but Krishna's his energies. Okay? Nothing else. This is Krishna energy. Our mind is Krishna energy. So we are not in contact in this material world. So how can we enjoy when we are not in contact? Only under the illusion we think we enjoy. But this is different, completely different.
So if you engage your lust in this way, you just to get married, and it won't. There won't be any difficult, after you're married, then everything's fine. It won't come up.
Yeah. And this is very nicely explained. Someone said, perhaps it was Prabhupada, that material world means difficulty. you cannot expect being in the material world that there won't be difficulty. There is a story. It's related to the 15th chapter, where there is description of the banyan tree, reflection of the original. That everything is upside down. So the example is when you hang it upside down. So it's not natural position. It's difficulty. We are not in the natural position. Our natural position is in the spiritual world. So we never will feel comfortable in the material world. Because we don't belong here. It's like you are in the prison, but it's not the normal place for the member of the society. So you will be never satisfied of staying in the prison, unless, I don't know, unless you like prisons. Perhaps someone likes prison. But then he creates his own prison, like, you know, the, someone... Okay, that's it. But okay, you never are satisfied in the material world. Material world means problems. So you can just what kind of problems you encounter, it depends on you. Okay. If you decide to be brahmachari, there are also problems. Okay, you have to stay brahmachari. It's a problem. And so when you become grihastha, there is a problem because you have to supply the money to the wife to develop the house and so on. It's a problem. In the material world is not free of problems. If you are looking for the place where you are free from problems, go to the spiritual world. You will have only problem. Only one problem is there. How to satisfy Krishna. And this problem gives you more and more pleasure. And this is the problem we really want to relish. Okay. Otherwise, there is suffering. Nothing but suffering. Okay. Any more questions? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. One more? No.
Life is tough and then you die. Dukkaliyam, Asashatam. Or what was it? Schopenhauer? He said, life is a tragedy that ends in death.
Yeah.
It's the same. Exactly. It's the same as this Dukkaliyam, Asashatam. It's full of suffering, it's a tragedy, and then Asashatam, it's temporary.
Yeah. Life is tragedy and ends in death. This is good. Thank you. That's a good end of this lecture.
Yeah.